Chapter 23. By Davin's reckoning, balls were redundant and tedious affairs for the vain and the bored. The same cows and the same bulls were herded into the same pastures to chew the same cud year after year. He had once expressed the thought to Emile, who considered it the most scandalous thing he had ever said, and had spent the entire afternoon expounding the virtues of balls and assemblies. Opportunities for news, opportunities for alliances, opportunities to woo. Davin also searched for opportunities to escape. The peerage had shunned him during his difficulties, only warming to him when prosperity had returned to Frostbourne. He considered most of them self-serving and without compassion, and could hardly stand their shallow conversation. Now that he was a clerk hiding from a wife and noble acquaintances who thought him dead, an opportunity to escape had inflated to a need rather than a desire. The first part of his plan had worked: arrive early enough so that he could avoid being announced. Under no circumstances would he have the herald bellow to the crowd, "Mr. David Harper, underclerk," to provide amusement or disdain to a preening, proud audience. If he would have had the company of Mr. Lambert, perhaps he could have endured it. Unsurprisingly, Mr. Lambert embarked on a voluminous vomiting spell that afternoon and was excused from the proceedings. Davin's firm constitution deprived him of so easy an escape. He supposed he could have lied, but he couldn't bring himself to do it, surprising himself with his own confused scruples. His very identity was a lie of epic proportions, and yet he couldn't bring himself to fake an illness. He'd even been shot not 3 weeks before and could have claimed a relapse, though with Mr. Lambert's absence, Davin thought the Queen would look at another health-related excuse from the accounting office with a little suspicion, and perhaps some displeasure. He had to admit, however, that there were two things he hoped to accomplish at the ball. First, he wanted to see Emile, though from a distance. It was a perverse and dangerous wish, but he had to know if she was happy, even if it cost him some pain. He also wanted to see if he could get news about Lady Hightower's situation. Nearly a week had passed since he administered to her, and he had not seen her since or heard more about the ledgers. He had felt it too forward to visit her apartments without an invitation or without the Queen's order. Those two purposes accomplished, he would make sure the Queen saw him once, and then he would dive out the door as if the building were engulfed in flames. The ball was not held in the palace, but rather in the Lord's Assembly Hall nearby. It was brightly lit, with white walls lined with paintings, statues, and leafy plants. A half-orchestra played at one end, a large table with foods at the other, while side rooms, as Emile would have pointed out, provided opportunities to get news, to form alliances, and to woo. Not to mention to get drunk and make a fool of oneself. It was in one of those rooms that he had issued his deadly challenge to Ariane's late husband, Lord Caunton of Hightower. Depressingly, the dung shovellers in the drive had dressed more ornately than he was. No one would mistake him for a servant, but they would likely think him some impertinent intruder and attempt to evict him. The safest place to escape scrutiny was to the side of a tall plant near the orchestra. No one mingled there because it was simply too inconvenient to talk over the music. Emile and Lady Hightower had not yet arrived, so he spent his time in observation.
"Excuse me, Mr. Harper."
Davin turned to find the most effeminate man he'd ever seen addressing him. He wore white pants and a jacket ornately embroidered with golden thread. A powdered wig and vanity dot on his cheek conspired to make him ridiculous. His accent was Cretesian, and despite the frippery, the man's eyes were those of a hunter.
"Yes,"
Davin answered.
"Allow me to introduce myself. I am Melchor Rains, attaché to the Honourable Ambassador Horace Clout of Cretus. I am, you see, a bit like yourself. I fear the ladies will simply ignore me all evening. Has the plant offered you any conversation, or perhaps asked you to dance?"
Davin understood the attempt at humour, but the nagging sense of wrongness in his mind prevented him from feeling any mirth whatsoever.
"I'm afraid not, Mr. Rains," he answered, "though you may find the conversation with the plants more rewarding than the conversation with the people."
Mr. Rains laughed politely, an affected levity worthy of the nobles he was apparently trying to imitate.
"You are naughty, Mr. Harper, but that does remind me that there was a matter I wished to speak with you about. Weren't you the one who discovered the nobles were being duped by some society or some such?"
"Yes, though I hardly think it will be of any interest to Cretus. Nobles are notoriously careless with their money.
It comes from having too much of it.
Yes, yes, quite, Melkor said. Ambassador Clout comments about that particularly often. My interest is in how you were rewarded. You were made a clerk, correct?
Davin wondered where this was going.
An underclerk, yes. But still a commoner?
Yes, I simply have a more pleasant work environment and better pay, he explained.
Interesting, Mr. Raines said, screwing his face up into a thoughtful expression. Are you a good shot, Mr. Harper?
Now Davin was thoroughly confused.
Better than some, worse than others. I recently heard someone comment on your shooting skill, I believe. Said you could hit a man between the eyes at 100 yards. I was wondering if you could do the same if a man were galloping away on a horse.
Like the Earl of Longford, you mean? Davin returned, fearful of what this attaché knew.
Was he the one?
Mr. Raines asked, acting as if he was thinking hard.
I've always had such a hard time remembering all the names of your nobility, but yes, like him.
I was so surprised to hear the tale. The attack came at least 4 hours into the outing. Most lords are good and drunk by then and couldn't have shot a horse that had its hoof on their boot.
Davin shrugged. Some men shoot better when they're a little drunk. The liquor calms their nerves and bolsters their enthusiasm.
Mr. Raines laughed again.
You are a delight, Mr. Harper, and quite right. Well, I suppose I shall leave you to your plant. Your name just keeps popping up, and I thought I might come take the measure of you. If I get bored, I think I shall take a few drinks and try shooting birds in the dark. You could join me.
He walked off, practically mincing as he went, humming to the tune of the music. The warning voice in Davin's head blared. Something wasn't right about that man. How would an attaché know anything about the shooting that had occurred in the clearing when fleeing to Belshire with the old ledgers, and how could he know that he had shot the men on horseback down in Harwickshire? Was word getting out? Did Cretus have spies everywhere? Maybe all of this lying and pretending is making me paranoid, he thought.
Lady Ariane Conton of High Tower, the herald announced.
Davin glanced up and smiled. She wore the red surcoat and the curled hair, just as she had done the day he had annoyed her so during his convalescence. She appeared vibrant, practically glowing, and a low hum of gossip filled the room. How much had her troubles circulated among her peers? Servants were notorious for spreading secrets, and Missa knew a great deal about the business of Lady Ariane Hightower. He kept a careful eye on Ariane as the ladies dove in and out of her circle, probably pecking at her for news. It would take work to pry her away from the needling women to have any real chance at extracting news from her. While he couldn't say for sure, it appeared the men were busily and hopefully commenting among themselves while throwing inviting glances her way. Perhaps her rejection of the Earl of Longford's presumptuous proposal had circulated as well. The hall continued to fill with familiar faces, and Davin kept to his plant until he grew tired of its company.
This is ridiculous.
He amended his plans. He just needed to leave as soon and as inconspicuously as possible. While the Queen might not see him, he could, if called upon to report, honestly tell her that he had attended. He could appeal to the strange Melkor Raines as proof. Chances were that Philippa wouldn't even miss him or even care that he had come, despite the specific invitation.
Mr. Harper,
Lady Hightower exclaimed, emerging from the crowd with a bemused face.
What are you doing here?
Davin bowed.
The Queen incomprehensibly invited Mr. Lambert and me to this ball. I've been asking this plant to dance for some time now to no avail, so I was about to leave.
She laughed.
I am sorry for your lack of success with such a lovely plant. I am glad to see you, though I'm afraid I have a complaint to lodge against you.
What have I done now?
And what is that, Lady Hightower?
Well, after your assistance several days ago, I commented to Missa that you made a better doctor than a patient. But a good doctor, Mr. Harper, checks up on his patients to make sure the remedy has taken hold. No apologies for your failure, Mr. Harper, only explanations.
She was playful. That was good. Her spirits had returned. Doctoring is a new profession for me, I'm afraid, and I do not know my duties well. How is your cheek faring? She seemed satisfied with the answer.
Very well. The herb had set a reek about the entire room by morning, but the bruise was nearly imperceptible in 2 days.
And can I assume by the speculative glances of the young men in the crowd
that you must have had some resolution to the other matter as well?"
A blush reddened her cheeks.
"Yes, I think I exercised considerable restraint, considering how violent my feelings had been. The Earl of Longford took it well, but is undaunted in his determination. As for my parents, my restraint was less shackled as I wrote that particular note. They have yet to send a reply, or even visit me since that time, though they are here in town. I thank you for your advice, as much as your herbs, Mr. Harper. You seem to see very clearly. It must be your spectacles."
The herald pounded his staff.
"Earl Weston Kernwill of Tarbor and his fiancée, Widow Lady Emile Carver of Frostbourne."
Daven shrunk involuntarily behind the plant, Lady Hightower's gaze following his to the entryway where the couple entered. It took a concentrated force of will to steady the hammering in his chest and clear his mind. He couldn't determine if fear of discovery or the woman herself caused his indisposition. She was clearly in her element, a trophy for her lordly fiancé and proud to walk at his side. She was happy then. He wasn't sure if he should feel loss or be pleased at the success of his plan.
"Are you well, Mr. Harper?"
Lady Hightower asked, eyes sympathetic.
"I am fine, thank you, Lady Hightower," he said. "I think I'm a little hungry. I have yet to eat because I'm afraid that if I approach the table dressed like this, I will either end up serving food or getting kicked out for looking like I came in off the street to beg. You're a friend of the Queen. Perhaps you could ask her to explain this bizarre invitation. It sent Mr. Lambert to his sick bed."
Ariane laughed.
"I will inquire for you and report. Do you—"
"Dearest Ariane, why are you talking to this person?"
It was Lady Carmen Drury of Underton, wife of a baron. Daven recognised her, the lady's penchant for gaudy fashion setting her apart from the rest of the finely dressed ladies. Her dress was coloured an improbable green, and he was sure her hat had denuded an entire gilded partridge. She had turned the corner from youth to age, and possessed an enthusiasm for all things gossip.
"This is Mr. David Harper, Lady Drury," Ariane said. "He's the one that rescued us from the scandalous Aid Society plot that robbed our estates year after year. He is also flame-touched."
"That's nice, dear," Lady Drury said while scanning the crowd. "My nephew is around here somewhere, and I wonder if you would do me the honour of meeting him. He is quite handsome. Now that the matter with you and the Earl is in question, I thought it might be a good opportunity for you to meet a few eligible men."
The herald's staff struck again.
"Duke Miles Longford, Duchess Dana Longford, and Earl Eutychus Longford, hero of Harrickshire."
The Longfords, prim, proper, and dressed to shame the room, were one of the oldest families in the kingdom, one of the few left whose names matched the property they owned. The Duke was an average-sized man with a controlled oval face, coal-black eyes, and a grey wig, hiding whatever time had done to his hair. His wife was plump and bedecked with a drawer full of jewellery. For having recently earned the rebuff of the woman he was courting, the Earl of Longford appeared in remarkably good spirits. Lady Hightower didn't even bother to turn to look at him.
"All part of the game," Daven surmised with a smirk.
"Shall we go, Lady Hightower?" Lady Drury prodded. "I should like you to get acquainted with him before Earl Longford siphons away all your time in an attempt to recover you."
The Lady Hightower seemed torn, so Daven rescued her.
"Thank you for your well wishes, Lady Hightower," he said. "I was about to leave. It was a pleasure to speak with you."
Did she appear disappointed?
"Very well. But I will get you the answer you requested as soon as I can."
He genuflected, and Lady Drury dragged her off into the crowd. Time to leave. He checked the room to ensure that Emile was nowhere near his intended route of departure and waited for the orchestra to kick up a tune to dance by. The dance would pull all eyes to the floor and no one would notice him scurry away like a rat into the night. As soon as the violins began their lilting tune, he commenced his journey, noticing Lady Hightower, paired with Lady Drury's nephew, regarding him.
"I think I could tolerate a ball if I could spend it with her."
He continued on, swooping in close enough to the food table to grab a bit of the proffered cake before walking nondescriptly toward the door. The servants stationed there were about to open it for him when a hand grabbed his arm in a firm grip, sending his cake to the floor. The Lord High Sheriff pulled him aside.
"Leaving, are we, Mr. Harper?"
he asked, voice flat, but emphasis on the name chilling.
"I was, my lord," Davin said. I can't see a purpose in staying here amongst my betties, so I thought I might try the ceremonies at the Flame Cathedral. The sheriff's expression was impossible to read, a skill that had no doubt served him well in his profession. It froze Davin's blood.
The Queen asked me to make sure you didn't leave before she arrived, so sit tight, Baron, and watch your equals for a while.
Baron. Davin's face blanched, fear pricking his skin. It was over. His charade had come to an end. His limbs didn't seem to want to work any more, and he let the Lord High Sheriff pull him aside. What had betrayed him? In his mind he retraced his actions and his interactions. At no point had anyone shown the slightest flicker of recognition when they had met him. Perhaps Mr. Lambert or another of the Queen's agents had actually decided to investigate his fabricated background, of which, he realized, he had not been particularly consistent in the telling.
Perhaps we should retire to some location more private, Davin suggested.
No, no,
the sheriff replied, eyes and face hard, even a little angry.
I have orders to keep you here, Lord Carver. I'm sure this will be one of the more memorable day of burning balls in recent history. There was always something just a little off about you. I'd started to forget my first impressions of Mr. Harper. I'd wager skulking off on your wife would account for that nervous, hunted cast to your face that I noticed when I first saw you.
Running for the door crossed Davin's mind. The sheriff no longer had a lock on his arm, and Davin could run like a purebred racehorse in a pinch. Only two bored servants and the outer door guard separated him from the freedom of the street.
Don't even think about it, Carver,
the sheriff remonstrated.
I know that look. I've got men in the street that will put a bullet in you if you so much as poke your nose out the door.
Queen Philippa of Bittermarch.
The music died and the entire room bowed as the Queen and two ladies-in-waiting entered through the door Davin had just eyed at his escape route. Noticing Davin, the Queen shuffled over and grabbed his arm, pulling him forward.
I must apologize, Lord Carver, for what I am about to do. I'm afraid this easy life you have constructed for yourself is at an end. I no longer need Mr. David Harper. I need Baron Davin Carver.
All rise!
Davin turned to her.
I beg of you, do this privately, Your Grace, not for my sake, but for that of the Lady Carver.
Her return expression was almost sinister, and she lowered her voice to a whisper.
I have no mind to spare Lady Carver any pain whatsoever. She certainly spared you none. I think a good shock might take a little of the starch out of her stockings. Again, forgive me.
She stopped as the assembled nobles awaited her pleasure, some nattering to each other, no doubt, about why the Queen chose an underclerk as her escort. Releasing his arm, but indicating that he should stay put, she turned to the audience. Davin, stripped of his pride, face burning, stared at the floor in shame.
Lords and ladies, friends and enemies, welcome to the day of burning ball.
Polite laughter and clapping ensued, which the Queen waved off.
Now, I am quite sure that by now you have all run out of any good or witty conversation, and are no doubt in want of some bit of gossip to fill your mouths and the time. It is with some sadness I announce the death of a rather illustrious person, Mr. David Harper.
The Queen appeared to enjoy the confusion for a moment.
While his demise is tragic, to say the least, his birth, perhaps, was the greater tragedy. You see, David Harper had no natural mother, but was rather the offspring of one man's pain and desperate imagination. Beside me is the man who brought David Harper into the world nearly a year ago. David Harper has done us honourable and brave service, but I must lay him in his grave now. The man who has served as my underclerk, who exposed the Aid Society plot, and who is registered as a member of the House of Light, is not Mr. David Harper, as he would have us think, but rather Lord Davin Carver of Frostborn.
Gasps faded to gawking, searching stares. In a fit of pride, Davin lifted his burning face to the onlooking crowd, fighting to keep his knees from pounding out a racket one against the other. Shock, disgust, disdain, anger, and then Ariane. Pity and tears. The whispering began to boil when the Queen raised her voice.
Hear me, she yelled.
The crowd quieted.
Hear my punishments that,
before she could finish,
A haunted, disbelieving Emile emerged from the throng. She stepped forward cautiously, mouth agape, as if approaching someone so diseased or mutilated as to be repulsive at a distance. She stopped in front of him, and Davin removed his glasses. The crowd went dead quiet as she examined him and then punished him with a stinging slap.
"Cannot even the grave rid me of you?" she screamed hysterically, naked fury consuming her.
She backed away from him.
"I hate you. I hate you. I hate you," she swooned, unsteady. "I am getting married. Do you hear me? To a duke? Die. Just die."
Her words faded with her consciousness, eyes rolling into her head as she collapsed in a heap on the floor.
"Oh, dear," the Queen intoned coldly. "Would one of you gentlemen please scoop the lady up? Earl Tarbor, perhaps? No? By all means, someone help her and convey her to the infirmary."
In the end, the Lord High Sheriff drafted two of his men to the task, shooting Davin a look of disgust while they executed it. The Queen continued.
"Now, good people, hear what I have to say. I pronounce that Davin and Emile Carver are divorced effective from the date Lord Carver left her. Her marriage to the Earl of Tarbor may proceed unhindered, that is, if both parties are still agreeable. I strip Lord Carver of his lands, his honour, and his freedom until such time as I redeem him. He will be resident in the Queen's dungeon until I will it otherwise. Lord High Sheriff, remove him and deal with him as I have instructed you. Now, where is the cake? I hear it is especially moist, and I wouldn't want it to go stale before I sampled it."
Melkor Rains couldn't suppress a grin. So Mr. David Harper, sharp-shooting clerk, had no connection with the Queen's agents, and had stumbled upon the Aid Society plot by chance. He had abandoned his wife and assumed another identity. It explained a few loose ends that had troubled Melkor. First, the trained eye could spot Mr. Harper's sloppy disguise in an instant. The glasses clearly hindered rather than helped him, and the poor man could hardly remember which leg to limp on. But had he really stumbled into the Boot and Wheel Caravan Company and uncovered the suspicious accounting by happenstance? Had he really been perfectly placed to shoot down the phony assassins in Harwickshire? And would a Lord of Bittermarch be so clever as to sneak the ledgers into Belshire as he did, not to mention blasting down the men sent to kill him with uncanny skill? And then actual shame and embarrassment as the Queen exposed him. These from a man who fought dales with knives and shot men without a second thought. Lord Davin Carver simply didn't add up. Perhaps the man didn't see that the Queen had merely taken from him what he had already given up, or noticed that she had a particular fondness for him. He would ask Ambassador Cretus what he knew of Davin Carver, but for the present the disgraced lord would disappear from view and would no longer serve as the patsy, as Melkor had planned. He needed another. And now that Melkor knew the secret of the pretended fame of Earl Eutychus Longford, he could squeeze him into filling the role Egor Guest, leader of the Fist, had in mind. If the original plans of Ambassador Clout had provided any fruit whatsoever, then this next move would not have been necessary. But parading all the dead bodies of the supposed victims of the massacre through Bittermarch and all the fiery rhetoric in the House of Lords had hardly started the rebellion against the Queen that Horace had hoped. The old lady had grit. She was cleverer than Horace had anticipated. She knew that if Cretus dared to take the first step toward war, that Bittermarch would rise up and squash them like insignificant insects. So with Horace's plan failing miserably, Egor Guest had sent Melkor some private instructions outside of the ambassador's knowledge. Still, the ambassador had one more part to play. From the relative safety beside the plant previously occupied by the late Mr. Harper, Melkor surveyed the room. The Queen had certainly been right about one thing. The scandalous affair had woken up tired tongues and minds, the entire room now aflame with speculation and mockery. The sleepy Earl of Tarbor had left soon after his fiancée had collapsed. Some speculated that he went to console his bride. Melkor rather thought he would be consoling his horses after whipping them all the way back to Tarbor. The Queen, quite oddly pleased with herself, appeared the only content, carefree person in the room. After a little searching, he found his intended target, Eutychus Longford, in a side room accompanied by his parents and the lovely Arianne Hightower. A pale, drawn visage afflicted the noblewoman, the only one, Melkor noticed, who had shed any tear of sympathy for poor Davin Carver.
It would be a shame when such a beautiful bird as Lady Hightower ended up caged in a real dungeon, rather than the Queen's more accommodating one where Davin would serve. She was a vision, though. Melkor reined in his thoughts with effort. The ladies of Bitterbarch, like the larders, were luxurious and well-appointed, unlike the ascetic, scrawny offerings of his own land. These distractions, however, were beneath a member of the Fist, and he turned his attention back to the business at hand. The Earl had placed himself across from his intended bride, no doubt to lend himself an advantageous view of her gifts. His father, the Duke of Longford, had embarked on a sour lament.
"Such a blight! Such a blight on our fair country to have this cowardly base behaviour turn us all to fools! Were I a younger man, I would shoot Lord Carver myself. I hope the Queen has him horsewhipped daily until either the idiot or his idiocy is dead."
Lord Longford cut his comments short as Melkor approached. The four nobles eyed the representative of Cretis narrowly as he invaded the area where they conversed. Lady Hightower appeared on the verge of tears. Melkor dropped into his ridiculous fop persona.
"I do hate to trouble you," he apologized obsequiously, "but I wonder if I might have a word with the Earl."
The incensed Duke Longford regarded him as he would a pile of dung on his driveway.
"Cretis can have no business that concerns my son. Now begone. Back to your master and his lies."
Melkor bowed low. "Pardon me. I just wish to inquire about some rumours going around about Harrickshire and the credit of it. I will leave you."
He turned to go, noting Lady Hightower's surprised look. Eutychus, while not as demonstrative, remained composed by comparison. His parents might mistake their son's shocked expression for indignation.
"So the Lady Hightower knows," Melkor thought, as he hummed and minced back to the main room.
The reports of the events hadn't mentioned her as a witness. Had Eutychus told her that Davin Carver had killed the three horsemen? Had Davin Carver confided it to her during his brief visit to Hightower? Most importantly, did other people know of Eutychus's fraud? The Earl found him sooner than Melkor had expected, stopping him near the food table during a dance.
"Good. He is fearful. I would hear what you wished to speak with me about," the handsome Earl said curtly and quietly, plucking a strip of juicy beef from a platter.
Melkor cast his gaze around furtively to signal to the Earl that what he wished to say had great import and secrecy.
"I must be brief. I fear for the life of your queen."
Eutychus blinked, eyes wide. Melkor continued with an air of furtive urgency.
"Cretis is unhappy with her response to the massacre of our people, and I'm afraid our leaders are planning something rather drastic. Now, before you get too incensed, know that I have no proof, as yet, of their plans. I have only suspicions about actions that I cannot, in good conscience, condone, as they will bring us to a war we cannot win. Can I count on your help if there is some plot against the life of your monarch?"
The Earl was pleased.
"But of course." "Good. I know it must be hard to wear someone else's fame, but this may give you the chance to purchase some of your own. I will contact you if I uncover anything."
The Earl nodded, eyes bright.
"I am at your disposal, Mr. Raines, in anything that will serve our queen."
Melkor nodded and left Eutychus Longford behind.
Easily done.
Offing the pesky Davin Carver would take a little more planning, now that his whereabouts would be difficult to ascertain, but with all the powerful nobles incensed at the disgraced lord, Melkor thought he might not even need to try.